Thanks so very much for joining us again this afternoon. You down there in level 3 and us up here in level 4.
Ai, ka whai te kōrua ki a koe me te whānau whānami o Wātea, tēnā tātou. Yeah, it's great to be in level 3. It's great to be on a sunny day, actually, and more people out and about, just trying to get to grips with what this means for us now, with this, how the social distancing works, and seeing city council workers with their masks on, working on the road. So, yeah, look, we're getting into a new world, I guess.
Yeah, I guess this is the new normal, you know, in and out of lockdowns, and how we're going to cope with this and how to be flexible. Still, you know, still very sad, though, for our businesses, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I've got quite deep roots into the Christchurch business community. And one thing that's very apparent is that a number of businesses who sailed close to the wind last year during the lockdown used up so much of their cash reserves, have been working their way back to viability, only to go back into lockdown. So their runway, their cash runway has been cut into pieces, really. And so they're really struggling. And it was really a bit sad. I came through town this morning to see cafes with their little stores at the doorway, socially distanced, desperately wanting someone to walk along and buy something from them because they've just got to get going again. And so I guess our plea to all our people around the city, if you've got an opportunity to help our retailers out, then look, that monarchy, really important to all our people.
Yes, look, we spoke to a small business owner in Rotorua this morning, same thing, struggling, hairdresser actually. So, you know, there is no standing at the doorway for them.
no, it's not.
You know, some can, and that's fantastic. Look, you know, even though this is happening to our businesses, and particularly we spoke about our tourism sector earlier on, we do see that there was a slight increase in export profitability for our Māori authorities, especially with those that, you know, are in the four Fs or the five Fs, the fishing, forestry and farming. You know, good news for our export businesses, our large ones and our iwi ones.
Look, yes, and let's temper some of the expectation. What we're seeing is that a lot of our SMEs are coming through, especially for Māori businesses in new sectors, in IT, digital tech, for Māori businesses going into new markets, not just those more traditional markets that they've been using for some time. But what we've got to be really careful to understand is while the revenue numbers are slightly up on last year, which is great, the costs of doing business have tripled. So the supply chain cost to get product to market, to getting space on aeroplanes, to get the regulatory compliance through customs to get into these markets, that cost has gone up. So the businesses are still struggling. Yes, they've got their revenue, but they're really just keeping the place open and keeping their people employed. They're not able to put money into growing the business at this point in time. They're just trying to stay alive.
Look, in terms of our Fs, our farming, fishery and forestries, I just want to harken back and get your harken back to the National Party's Finlayson's Te Tere Whenua Act was trying to unbundle unutilised, unproductive lands so that whānau could develop their whenua, whether it was in horticulture or agriculture, to either export, think about export, or actually just to supply a domestic market. Now, while we're seeing these exports, there's actually a great opportunity for our Māori to utilise unproductive lands, is there not? And it was a pity that they scrapped that, you know, this government scrapped the Te Tere Whenua Bill.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to do an advertorial for Chris Finlayson's new book, but he's done
a
very...
Oh, I didn't know he had a book, and I called him Chris Finlayson. I didn't know
Chris
Finlayson,
yes. Oh, I haven't got to that chapter yet. He Kupu Tauranga is the book, but it's a very good, concise summary of the various treaty negotiations he undertook, and he's very clear around creating innovative opportunities for different iwi across the country according to their own situation and their own opportunities going forward. And a lot of that was around utilisation of previously unused land. And he talks a lot about the relationship with DOC and getting Doc on board. And in many occasions, he said that quite clearly, once the land was put in the trust or the, I guess, the control or the care, the kaitiakitanga by Māori, then the care for the land went up. And I'm not trying to be critical of Doc or other government agencies or other legislation, but we all know the care and love that Māori have for their whenua and the ability they will have to do good things with it. And so Chris Finlayson was very clear around using innovative ways to help those Māori to get access to the resources to be able to do something for their people in the regions, which is even more important, creating things in the regions. And it's a really good read. If you get a chance, you might find yourself in one of those chapters.
Yeah, I should hope so. But look, also too, talking about, you know, one of the F's, farming, seed and feed funding for farmers in Te Waipounamu. Now, that's a really great initiative. You were a part of that in Ashburton. How are our farmers doing down south?
They've, as we know, they had some major struggles with quite severe flooding. And my wife and I had the experience post-earthquakes of being dug out of liquefaction by farmers who simply said, well, let's come into town and help out. And my wife will tell a wonderful story about her whole street was buried under liquefaction, and the farmers came along and got their diggers and helped dig all these houses out of liquefaction. So when this happened back in April, May, we looked at what can we do to help the farmers? How can we return the manaaki to our farming community? Because they lost all their winter feed. Some of the properties, $800,000 worth of damage. The damage obviously covered by insurance, but they had livestock with no food. So we thought, how can we help them? We put together a Give a Little page. We ran a couple of events. We ended up raising, in concert with Fonterra, around $115,000 that can go straight back to those farming communities to get that winter feed, to keep the stock alive, basically. And thankfully now we're, you know, first day of spring today, although probably got a couple of southerlies still to go. I'd like to think that the farmers are getting close to through the worst of that cold patch. And with the support of the communities in Christchurch City, we've been able to help our cousins out in the rural areas.
Yeah, look, and that's something that we, you know, the flooding, as an example, although we don't have that many farms up here, but we just had a flash flood up here in West Auckland. That was something very unexpected. So, and some of our whānau are unable to return to their whare. So, you know, our hearts and thoughts go out to those whānau, as well as the farmers down your way as well too, because we're all in this together. Do the levels mean much to farmers?
Well, yes and no. Probably, and I'm not a farmer, so I'm guessing a little bit, but I think the issues will come when they're starting to move livestock and they're starting to have to interact with stock and station agents. How do they conduct their businesses in that regards? If it's a matter of containing their farm during a level 4 lockdown, I think that's reasonably straightforward. But it's when they've got to interact with stock and station agents, when they've got to get supplies delivered, they've got to, when it comes time for sowing their seeds for the summer period, who operates the machinery, who does all the planting. So there's all these issues. They'll have different issues to what we have in the cities, but they'll definitely have issues that they'll need help with.
So how do we keep the South Island safe now that everybody, you know, you've moved into level 3, so has everyone south of Mercer, Auckland and the far north still in 4, although that might change on Thursday for the far north, although our rangatira, your whānau, Mr. Stevens, your whānau, your iwi leaders up north, are wanting to stay in level 4 just to keep it, you know, hunk it down a little bit more, but there seems to be a desire from the government to open them up. How does the safe remain safe from us that are up here, up in the far north?
There are some certain, I guess, geographical advantages to in the far north in that it's reasonably easy to contain, as opposed to the wide open pastures and plains of Canterbury, with so many roads crisscrossing and ways in and out of the area. Look, we're fortunate, let's be frank, the South Island, touch wood, hasn't been troubled with COVID incursions yet, but we're just one one test away from going back to level four ourselves. And the Prime Minister stated as much this morning when she inferred that while the South Island is in level three, we still have to be very, very vigilant. Now, all of our communities have to be very, very vigilant. The best way that I can suggest that our communities can work to look after all the various communities and the various people around those areas is to work in concert with those authorities that can help, whether it's the Māori wardens, whether it's the local police. And look, I know there have been issues around roadblocks and turning vehicles around. There's been criticisms of certain communities leaving their cities and going to their holiday homes. That's kind of what happens. You know, this is life, and how do we best work together to come up with the right solution? I don't think there's anybody maliciously wanting to go spread this disease around the country, and I don't think there's anybody who's maliciously trying to put a spanner in the works of getting New Zealand back on their feet. But I do believe there's an education opportunity, and it's an ongoing opportunity to tell our people this is the best way to do things, and how can we work together to get the best outcome.
Yes, yes, indeed. Look, kōrero has popped up. Actually, it's been COVID has sort of dampened it down, but there was kōrero that popped up in the media again before lockdown, and it's around guns and police. Police and guns.
Yes.
Now, you would know all about, you know, the pros and cons of this being on both sides, you know, the police side and on the outside observing.
Yeah.
Not routinely armed, but what is the difference between routinely armed and armed full-time?
Right. My last role in the police before I left in the early 2000s, I was a shift commander and inspector up in Wellington, and I was routinely armed every day I went out on patrol. I was the only person on the shift that carried a firearm. I carried a Glock under my armpit and a holster. So that's being full-time armed as the one immediate response unit for that particular shift. What the situation now is, when you see a patrol car, that car will have a secure box in the front of the car, a metal cabinet locked with two pistols in it, and the majority of cars will also have a separate rifle cabinet in the back of the car or the boot, being what kind of car it is. Once again, steel box, specific security. So those are weapons that are on hand should they be required, should circumstances dictate. Now, let's put this all into context. Last year, the police on 3,540 occasions went to incidents where firearms were available to the people they were talking to, over 3,500. So that's 10 times a day police were being put at risk where there was potential for firearms to be used. So that is marked growth over the last 5 to 10 years in the use of firearms, the use of situations where the police have had to use that ultimate form of protection and constraint. And so when you look at it, there's two sides of the coin. There's the side of the coin that says we must give our police as much protection as possible. And then there's the other side of